9to5.cc. We're not working. Why should you? Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to a brand new episode of Montreal's favorite, that's right, favorite podcast. I'm speaking, of course, about this show. Go plug yourself. Wait, you have other podcasts that you listen to? Don't even tell me about them. On this week's episode, we talk with Dan Bingham, who's actually a senior writer on Ubisoft's Far Cry 6. Which is very exciting. Walter steps in to co-host this one. You know, Walter, who retired all those years ago, still co-hosting all the time, so that's great. Dan used to be a stand-up comedian. He actually might be getting back into stand-up comedy. That's something that's going to be happening. But currently, he works as a writer for Ubisoft, and specifically, he most recently was working on Far Cry 6, which just came out this week. We obviously talk a lot about video games, the process of writing video games, like some of the fun challenges that can come from writing in video games, and we start off by talking a bunch about surgery. So that is how we start it. If you like Go Plug Yourself, obviously share this episode, share the show in general, tell your friends. There's a local podcast where we talk to interesting Montrealers every 2 weeks. Get the word out there. We love you so much. Thanks, and go plug yourself.
Go plug yourself, you plugging mother plugger. Go plug yourself.
Walter, you're back, buddy.
Wow, it wasn't even a countdown on the thing. We're back, and you know, we got kicked out of Grumpy's after doing that one podcast there.
Never again. Ram said you did it here nearly a decade. Yeah. Never again.
So now we're back doing it virtually, which is okay because our guest today is a little on the late upside. I don't know if that's accurate.
I mean, hip replacement. Hip replacement, hip enhancement. Or how much like the $1 million man are you, Dan?
I'm at about $625,000.
Okay. So you're getting there.
Yeah.
And also, no, a $6 million man. The $1 million man was the wrestler. The $6 million man, named Steve Austin, was from the show. So you're like, you're one-tenth of the $6 million man, Steve Austin.
That's right.
Nice. Yeah. How, I have always been fascinated by hip replacements. Before we talk about anything else.
Sure.
Does it feel good? Does it feel like is it night and day? Or are you still recovering? Like,
so the surgery itself was 2 weeks ago, like almost to the day. I was released from the hospital two Wednesdays ago. The surgery itself was legit the easiest and most pleasant part of the whole experience.
Was it because you were out? Were you under?
I was conscious.
Oh. So it's like a local, like you're like, I can't feel my legs.
I mean, they give you an epidural, and then they also give you drugs that the anesthesiologist explains. She goes, "Oh, these drugs will make you indifferent to what's going on around you,
like all things."
And I was it's the opposite of indifferent. It was more euphoric. Like I was. Oh.
But I mean, you could have a euphoric indifference, right? Like if you're just sort of like, you're like, oh, hey, guess what? Somehow Trump, the recounts went through. Now he's back in charge. You're like, meh.
Yeah.
You know, like there could be a euphoric indifference.
Yeah. That's true. You know what, though? That's exactly what it was. Because at one point, you know, after they'd, you know, I'm lying on this table. I wanted to be knocked out. Like I was terrified going into this. I wanted to be oblivious, unconscious, in the dark. Mm-hmm. But then at one point, after, you know, the drugs were injected, she comes up to me and she's like, well, they've already started the surgery and you're like, could not feel a thing, had no clue. I'm like, and then I was like, wow, okay, this is going to be all right.
Did they give you an epidural, Dan?
Yes. Yeah. They start you off with
epidural. I got one of those ones. Like a hernia operation. Yeah.
Oh man.
What the other thing too is like, so how long is it? Are you just like listening to a podcast or whatever while you're there? Are you like chatting up the nurses? Like, what's the What's the protocol? You'd be like, hey, can you like put on Sopranos or whatever, like just while you're just sitting there.
Well, it is funny because someone did offer me headphones to listen to radio.
Okay.
And they're like, hey, what's your favorite radio station? And I haven't thought about radio stations in a long, long time. So I was like, I don't know. Shom 97.7 FM. It was
like,
literally.
You're like the Spirit of Rock, Shom 97.7 FM.
You could nobody had run by you beforehand or something. Maybe you could have brought in like a mixtape or something, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Something. And then, so he puts the headphones on and I swear like, 20 seconds into the song, I was like, I don't want to listen to this. I want to know what's going on. Oh, yeah. And then so they took off the headphones and then I literally could hear them sawing through my bone, and then hammering. And so like, you know, apologies to the artist that I was listening to, but I would rather listening to the sawing of my femoral head than your music.
Wow. Like I went in for a really, I guess like an intense, what they call like a deep scaling where they cut away parts of your gums and like they went through the entire mouth. And I was like that. I was like, there was something that they were doing. Obviously my entire mouth was like frozen.
Surgery up.
I was listening to a book on pain.
Okay.
This is the show now. It's our
God
Halloween
it.
Spectacular.
Why do we have a surgery episode?
But yeah, but it's so weird that you said like the sound, because that was one of the things that like I was like, I hate this. Like just hearing like this weird like crunch and scrape on your teeth. There's no feeling, but I just like hear it kind of like resonating in my head while I'm listening to like a book on tape. And I was
like,
this is no good.
Yeah.
No, it didn't really sound like a grinder.
Yeah,
I'd say the worst. I mean, I guess you don't see it though, at least in the hip. Because I was like, the worst thing when I was doing this deep scaling thing was just like every time the dentist's hands come out, there's just like so much blood, and I was like, oh, I'm a horror show right yeah. now. I'm like, this yeah. is like my entire. And there's the pipe in your mouth that is also like whatever it's sucking is now like solid red. I see it going out of the corner of my eye. I see the hands coming out covered in red, and I was just sort of like, I don't feel a thing, but I'm like, what is? This is a complete and total horror show. Like if I like walked in on this, I'd be like, oh, you're murdering a man. Like yeah. there's just blood everywhere.
Well, this was,
but,
I've had that scaling done. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It is horrific.
So speaking of, I guess, murdering people, you just wrote a really big first person shooter where, if you're the main character, you ostensibly murder. I played the Far Cry games. You murder 1,000+ people throughout the course of a Far Cry game.
Can we introduce the guest yet?
It's Dan Bingham.
Dan Bingham.
Minute
video game writer, par excellence. a very funny man. They're like, my fucking internet sucks tonight. I just ate a big pile of shit.
It's okay. We hear you. Very funny man and senior writer on
Far Cry 6, amongst other things. Hell of a poker player.
Amongst?
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
So the Far Cry series, we were talking about this a little bit at the beginning. I played literally all of them since 2, including all their weird like spin-offs. Right? Because there's like the main one and then they always do a spin-off. Like 3, it was Blood Dragon. 4, it was Primal. 5 was New Dawn, I want to say.
Yeah.
So they always like do like a main one and then they kind of like reuse the map for another game that may or may not be connected. Big series. I find it's weird because it's like it is absolutely a AAA game and I'm like in no way am I dissing the sales of it, but it somehow always feels like the kind of like almost like the indie cousin. It's not indie at all. It's Ubisoft Huge Studio, but it always seems like it's not Call of Duty. It's not.
Why are you throwing like, shame at the game? Like, straight off the beginning of the
I'm
podcast.
Not. It's because doing? It's. I feel that it always operates in like
it's
a
not
niche,
a niche
market.
It's a massive, a huge like, fucking game, and it's the best. Far Cry.
That's a commercial for Far Cry. But I was gonna say, like, I literally don't like it. My point was, I do not play first person shooters, but I play every Far Cry.
Right.
So it's like it's that. My point was like it operates in kind of a, like it's an FPS. But like it's always kind of been its own thing on the other side. So It's also love the fact that, I mean, I guess they're mostly
also
made in Montreal.
This Far Cry has Gustavo Fring in it. Gus Fring.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Sure. Did you meet him? Did you get to meet him?
I did not get to meet him. Damn. Unfortunately. Well, I mean,
Giancarlo Esposito, is that his
most
name?
Most of the force?
Yeah,
nice.
Giancarlo Esposito.
It, points.
I mean, for the last year and a half of the game production, we were all in COVID times, so we were all at home. And we were all, you know, we were doing a lot of the voice recordings and a lot of the motion capture shoots like remotely. So yeah, there was,
you're like, put on this spandex outfit full of lights in your living room. Point this camera at you. Move around.
Yeah, glue all these ping pong balls to your face and talk into the camera.
And I guess Walter jumped in with the Giancarlo Esposito, but like one of the big, I think the big Far Cry deal, at least since 3 onwards, has been the like charismatic villain who's like in many ways more of a character than you are. Like you're kind of the main guy's usually pretty much just like action guy.
Yeah.
And then the villain gets all the best lines and the best dialogue and the best monologue and all that stuff. Like the villains have kind of been, I think, the point of the series for the past little while. So
yeah,
I'm assuming that's the Giancarlo Esposito role is the big bad guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Just eating up screen time. So you got to write dialogue for him.
I did. The Ubisoft Toronto studio was the lead studio on this project. Montreal, we worked on an area of the map called El Este. Mm-hmm. So there's 3 main areas of this map. We are the last ones on the way towards the, you know, towards the end of the game. And a lot of the stuff with Giancarlo was written by the writers at Toronto.
Okay.
I did get to write a couple of speeches. So like as you're going through the game, you're going to hear like speakers playing on the streets, mm-hmm. that play like his propaganda.
Nice.
So I did get to write a couple of those. Which was pretty sweet.
Cool. And that's okay, I just had a question. So, like, was this game was it significantly delayed, or was it delayed at all by COVID?
It was.
I remember seeing ads for this game like a couple years ago.
Yeah, but it wasn't super significantly delayed. It was only by maybe 6 months.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be spring.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And,
Yeah, and just my other question was, so like all the games sort of like they take place kind of like in their own sort of reality or like geographic reality that's like a, but the, where, what is this, are you allowed to reveal with where this game is supposed to kind of based on, what part of the world this this game is sort of inspired by?
Yeah, it's a fictionalized version of Cuba, basically.
They've done that, like the first one was a fictionalized version of like some African Congo style. Third one was like some.
Well, it's just like an island.
Yeah, exactly. But like it's an island with like heavy like pirate vibes. And then the fourth one is like a weird, I guess, like Tibet adjacent.
To name them all.
Yeah.
The fifth one is America.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because I had heard about, like, I was still working on Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I think, when I first heard about Far Cry 6, because every year Montreal has like I guess like a conference where everyone kind of talks about the projects that they're working on. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing the Nav, who's like the narrative director out of Toronto, and he gave a presentation on Far Cry 6, and all he talked about was the trip to Cuba that him and the team went on at the beginning. A lot of time, that's what, like a lot of the Ubisoft projects that are set in historical locations, mm-hmm. They often will send the team to those locations to scout, to meet the people, get interviews, take pictures, and
that's a hell of a perk.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like, especially if you're seeing like all the Assassin's Creed stuff, you're just sort of like, oh, we just need to spend a bunch of time in Greece and whatever. And like, or now we're going to spend a bunch of time in Rome. Like,
yeah. Well, it was awesome. Like with Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I wasn't there for the initial scouting of the region. But mm-hmm. when the game was launching, they sent a team to kind of go show Greece what we had done. You know, so...
Just like in history, there's an assassin who murdered dozens, if not hundreds of people, just like your actual history, Greece.
So I remember it was already super fascinating hearing about this project years before I even got on board. Like they had already put together like a book of all these incredible characters that they'd met and stories from Cuba and photos and
sold. I'm buying Assassin's Creed, buying Far Cry 6 today. I was going to say one of my favorite things ever though is when video games are either like based on real places or I guess very reminiscent of real places. The one that always springs to mind because it was such a weird experience was Barcelona, because in Tony Hawk's Underground 2, there's a level in Barcelona where you skate all the landmarks and stuff of Barcelona. And then when I was there, I was like, oh, like it was like it lined up. I was like, this is the Rambla. That means there's the weird like curvy thing down to the left. And like, and it was there. And I'm like,
oh no way!
Like yeah, exactly. It was like the map was kind of like a condensed version of the Ramblas area in Barcelona.
No way.
With a lot of the like landmarks still geographically located. I was like, it literally feels kind of like I've been here because I played that level in Tony Hawk a bunch. Like,
oh, that's very cool.
And that's like, that was one of my favorite. Like, I was like, that's amazing. And anytime there's that experience in a video game where you're like, I was in the video game before I was here physically, but the developers made
this,
it so
there was this one time close. Where I was at this old Russian military complex. And I knew exactly where the bathrooms mm-hmm. were because of GoldenEye.
That's a true story. I was with him. We were just, you know, like stumbled out of the snow in Siberia. And just was like, the bathrooms are over here. Trust me. Careful, though, because like Odd Job comes down the stairs up here.
GoldenEye.
Mm-hmm. So how do you get to your job, right? So it's like I assume you were a writer beforehand of some variety, or at least like, did you go to school for writing? Were you just writing short stories or whatever, or was this just all happenstance?
Oh, man, I've always loved writing. I've always loved storytelling. And media, I went to Concordia University. I studied film, television, script writing, all that stuff. My dream was to be a writer on some kind of cartoon animation show.
Okay.
At Concordia, I wrote a spec script for Family Guy. Because I loved everything, I couldn't focus on one thing, so I got into stand-up comedy. And so I did stand-up comedy and acting for about, 10, 12 years.
That's what
and
I
then
met
along
Dan.
The way... Yeah, that's exactly
that's
how Dan Walter and I met.
I mean, we had all that. There was some crazy times, the stand-up days and the St. Anne de Bellevue and the... All around, man. It was nuts. It was good.
It wasn't like it is now.
Just cruising around, being nuts with Le Gros Jambon.
There was no Facebook. There was no social media. We just rolled into town with microphones.
And Trevor Forstall.
Oh my god! Yeah. And coming off, this is taking too long because it's like everything I've ever done led to video games. So it's okay. So trying to summarize this.
Were you like a gamer
as a kid? Absolutely. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with video games, like just absolutely obsessed all the way up until about PlayStation 2. And then because of like school and work, like I just had to put the games away and focus on, you know, on school and getting a job and all that stuff. And
that was my mistake, is I didn't do that. I never put the games away.
Yeah, but like...
Not going to say I dropped out of Concordia, but I did drop out of Concordia. Not going to say it was video game entirely fault, but I was playing a lot of video games when I dropped out of Concordia.
It was hard. It was hard to be away from video games because they kept getting better and better and better. Like, I remember my first writing gig out of university was writing for, it was called MontrealMag.com.
Okay.
So it was like this magazine, and I was just doing these little interviews and writing like reviews for stuff. And I interviewed this digital artist. And the interview was amazing. Like, we had a great time. He showed me all his art. He talked about getting into Cirque du Soleil. And then when the interview was over, he goes, now I want to show you what I'm really passionate about. And then we go over to his office. And it was the most... I had never seen a home computer video game setup like this in my life, where it was like these big screens. This was like probably almost like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Speakers, just this big, huge, comfortable gaming chair. And then he showed me World of Warcraft. And I knew right there, I was like, I'm already addicted to it and I've never touched it. It was like the fantasy nerd in me couldn't believe it. The video game lover in me was like, wow. But I never played it.
Yeah, I was never that kind of gamer.
Yeah, from what I've heard,
like who knows what would have happened to your aspirations and whatever else. We just like, anyway. So then I played the MMORPGs. I've never done it either. Like, it's never. It's I get the appeal.
That's okay.
I've always thought that I was like, I feel like if I was single during the pandemic, I'd have been like, what's the biggest?
That's my cat. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I'm gonna have to let him out of the apartment.
Yeah. But yeah, I was like, if I was single during the pandemic, I would have been like, what's the biggest MMORPG right now? And this is my life now. But I wasn't single. But that genre never did it for me. Walter, what were the games that you played?
No Mercy,
GoldenEye,
Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Well, everything on the N64. Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Conker's Bad Fur Day was kind of a transformative experience for me, actually.
Conker's Bad Fur Day.
As far as like video games went, because it was like the first like real kind of like adult entertainment that I was kind of getting out of like. Actually, funny, legitimate, yeah.
And like actually funny, like video games that
never played. Conker's Bad Fur Day. Oh man, it's worth replay now. I think
Conker's Bad Fur Day was one of the.
You can probably download it somewhere. It's probably like on a hilarious store somewhere.
So yeah,
I've never played it.
Oh, it's good. N64.
No,
rare,
really.
Nice. It's like 2001 or something.
It's an N64 game. It's like a rare. It's Rare Soft too, right? It's Rare. It's the people who made Donkey Kong Country. Mm. Inexplicably, it was like 100%. One of those like late era N64 games.
Yeah, it's very adult rated. Yeah.
Oh wow.
They want to make like, I don't think it's rated M, but like they were like, we want to rate like 100%. It's not rated T for teen. Yeah, and apparently I'm sure that someone somewhere must have like written like an oral history on Conker's Bad Fur Day. It doesn't make any sense that like Nintendo would let Rare publish like an adult themed game on a Nintendo console. Like, there's something happened there.
Yeah,
someone did something. Like, it doesn't make sense in terms of like all of the branding imagery of both companies. Like, you're like, I'm the company that made Donkey Kong, putting out a console that makes Mario, and here's like a squirrel that's swearing at things. Like, you're like, what is happening?
Wow. And so like some of the, and like you mentioned,
so I've been working there for, it's been 5 years. Exactly.
Big titles or.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like I'm interviewing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, also the DLCs for that as well. The Fate of Atlantis DLCs, and then after.
Walter's about to launch his own video game company. So tell us what you did next at Ubisoft.
Yes. Yeah, and then after that, it was Immortals Phoenix Rising.
Okay.
And then from there, I went to Far Cry 6.
And so what goes into, like, I've always thought about that, especially like playing a game like modern giant like AAA games, right? Like where you have so many NPCs, so many interactions, even characters that are not like in scripted things, like just like dialogue of like, hey, what is this? Like thinking of like five because it's the last one I played. You're like, oh, there's just like a couple that like lives in a farmhouse. And what are they talking about when the character is not there? Like they're just gonna like, and they'll go. Like yeah. I always find it like it's one of those things. That, like I think the first game that I noticed that in the most was actually Max Payne, mm-hmm. where if you didn't like bust into the room, the characters would have like quite a bit of dialogue of where like the goons are just like chatting, yeah. you know, and you're like, yeah, someone's writing this.
Oh and,
yeah. Like, is there like different tiers of writers? It's like, okay, like this is not this is filler where you're just like, give me farm. Couple conversation, just run up pages for that. It gets to the voice actors, they do whatever that has no story impact, or okay, we'll give them some story clue, make sure at some point they talk about this location or whatever. Like what's like, there's so much writing in modern games with so much dialogue. What's like the different like tiers? How does that come together? Like,
well, I mean, the writing teams are usually pretty large, and also we are on the project for a long, long time. So a lot of times it goes in order, usually, like the cinematics are usually the things that get written first. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess every company is different, but this is how we would usually do it, because those take the longest to produce, mm-hmm. and they're the most expensive part of the video game process. So we
usually like anchor the whole story too, right? So you yeah. probably want those like in place while you write everything around it.
Yeah, exactly. So we try to get those done, you know, sooner rather than later. And then it's, it almost happens in order of importance, you know? So then mm-hmm. after that, it'll be, you know, all the mission givers, all the, mm-hmm. the actual dialogues, that take place. And then, you know, within a mission, like you said, if there is a farm that the player walks past, that little dialogue can usually be included within the mission itself. Mm-hmm. So that kind of, so if, let's say I'm a writer in charge of a mission, and I just happen to know that there is a couple in this farm, I'll often get a request to write a conversation for them. Or it's like, oh, we've got these two soldiers that'll be standing over here. Can you have them talking about whatever. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them will be contained within the mission, but then as you explore the world more and more, we also, and this is more towards the end where it's just like, okay, write 10 conversations about whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're given a theme. Sometimes you're given an age group. Sometimes you're given, you know, somewhat of a circumstance to try and keep these conversations within. Mm-hmm.
I've always imagined that like as a writer, those are like, that's where the most freedom probably comes, right? Like, it's just like, you're like, oh, just
yeah.
write dialogue for this couple. And you're like, all right, are they in a fight? Did they just watch a movie? Like, you could probably pull almost anything out.
And it is some of the most fun writing for me that I get to have. Because, yeah, like you said, there is a lot of freedom there and not a lot of it's because usually it's all eyes on everything.
You know?
Like you're writing on a game goes through so many different levels of feedback. But those conversations are a lot of fun.
I don't remember which game it was. It might have been Enter the Matrix. It might have been Max Payne. Because those both had bullet time, so they blur together. But there were two goons that if you like listen to them, they would just like, they were just spoiling movies. like they were like, oh, and it was like, and at the end, the guy with the cane was Kaiser Soze. They were like, unbelievable. And they were like,
no way.
Bruce Willis was the ghost. And like,
that's,
it's just
really
like, and
funny.
And it's just like, if you sit there and listen to them long enough, they're just like, all of these spoilers. And everyone's like, well, now these guys have to die.
That's
like,
really funny.
You know, I need to bust into this room and put an end to this spoiler fest. I was like, whoever wrote that must have just like had been so happy that they got to put that into the final game. I would just have like two goons just spoiling every movie possible.
Well, those are like, honestly, and in this game as well, you know, trying to leave little things, little kind of gifts mm-hmm. for the players is the best. Like any time we can reward a player for exploring or just hanging around a place they wouldn't normally hang around, or mm-hmm. not pulling the trigger instantly. You know, there's so many little gifts that we just hope people will find, you know, and it's not even just dialogues either. Sometimes it's notes, you mm-hmm. know? So sometimes you got to read these little notes that you'll find in different locations. And sometimes they tell stories that you would have never, you know, figured out if you hadn't, you know.
Far Cry 5 had that a lot. Every time you went into like a prepper's bunker, there was like a little note that kind of like explained the story of like whatever happened beforehand, and you can just kind of like put it together where you're like, oh, there was a bear attack.
Yeah.
You know, like this is what happened in this house, you know, like you're like the window's smashed. That's how the guy got thing there. The bear's been stalking him for whatever. I mean, or you could just like go in and be like, grab ammo and bounce. You know, like it's like
I think there's a play. There's like a little hut in a jungle, and I was in charge of writing notes for this one area, mm-hmm. and I think there's just you go into this hut, and there were just a bunch of dirty dishes, and so I just left a note and for then, someone like, giving shit to whoever.
Like, I mean, this is
like you left all your goddamn dishes in the sink.
Is the stuff that you're writing translated like a million times over, or what? Yeah, that's pretty much it. Hey, okay. All right, next question.
Yeah. That's the local.
And that's how that works.
That's the the localization team.
I deal with it. Yeah.
Takes care of that.
I have a lot of localized in
different languages.
That process also basis. Always just it's like blows like, my mind of like the staggering
back
amount.
In 18 languages.
Yeah.
And then do you ever get stuff back or see, and then you're like, that's not what that is, or like, that's not accurate at all. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, well, now, I mean, like, do you see something? Do you see the, yeah.
You mean, do I get back translations?
Or do you just wash your hands of it?
Usually we wash our hands of it. However, we are prepared for that. Like a lot of time we've got a system where these translators, if they are confused with a line, if they have any questions at all about a certain line of dialogue that maybe could be open to interpretation because of language, mm-hmm. like whether it's gender based or, you know, anything at all, I'll get an email and it'll be from the specific translator. Hey, this line, what exactly did you mean when you when you say blow up a silo,
sounds great.
Like, what is a silo? Can you provide a screenshot of what it is?
I can imagine though that there's probably, especially with the Far Cry stuff, probably more like swearing and like insults and whatever to be like, what does this mean? Because it's like the villains are for the most part, like a lot of them very crass, right? And you know, like you're just like, I mean, I don't know if Herc is in this one, but he might be, no spoilers. But he's in most of them. And like, I can only imagine his, like localizing his dialogue must be like a nightmare, right? Like he's like Southern, like, guy who just loves his bazooka, and like everything he says is like through that lens of like a guy who just his one love is bazooka and blowing stuff up.
Yeah,
all of his dialogue you're like, now make it French, you know, like I'm like, you know, like I pity the poor guy that has to like, okay, let's translate this entire character and everything that he says are like colloquialisms and whatever else, like,
oh, j'adore fucking mon bazooka.
Now I desperately just want to replay those games and like load up the French voice actors to see who, like, how Herc is.
Our lead writer sent a little message to me and one of the other writers, but it was just a scene that was written by us and it had been translated to Japanese. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, they sound super cool in Japanese. this is incredible.
I've always wondered that about.
No, it's because you're a racist.
Watching like foreign language, like horror films, where I was just like, are they scarier because I don't understand the language? Like, because I'm like, I'm less likely to. That's not what I was saying, Walter. I'm just saying that I was like, I'm less likely to pick up on, say, like overacting.
Well, my point is that you're just terrified,
right? So it's like every performance riveting to me because I can't pick up whether this person's overacting or not because I'm like, I just don't know the language. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I'm like, fuck! Yeah.
What the fuck is this shit? I watched Emily and got real scared.
A vision of terror.
Why does their French sound different from my French? Scariest movie of the year.
Probably. Emily.
Do you mean like Annabelle? No.
No. Emily.
No, Emily. Oh, okay. So yeah, I guess like the obvious follow-up would be, have you played Far Cry 6 or Assassin's Creed Odyssey and like seen your work, or have you like, or is it weird to go and do it and like been play through the game? Or
no, I mean, like I loved Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I loved working on that project because it was just a beautiful game, and it is so huge as well. Mm-hmm. That there are so many parts, like it's, you know, it's made by hundreds of people, studios around the world. So like, mm-hmm. I only got to see the parts that I worked on, you know, and, or that some of my kind of nearby colleagues were working on. I never got to see the whole thing. So it was an absolute joy to play through it and see it, you know. And then the coolest thing ever was when, people started making videos. Like there's an island in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, the Delos Islands, or the Silver Islands, sorry. Mm-hmm. And we used those islands as our demo to bring to E3. Like that was where, it was that part of the game that we were showcasing to basically sell the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. And so we had like, we had created these really great characters and we created like a romance. You can romance this Spartan soldier or this rebel named Kira. And if you romance one, it'll destroy your relationship with the other. And then you end up in a flick. And people made videos, like these hilarious, like love story videos where they just cut together the romance scenes between the player and like the Spartan soldier.
Nice.
They throw in some dramatic music and they add a little soft lighting. And it was so funny and it was so cool when to see fans reinterpret your work. Like that's something I never imagined in a million years.
That's super fun.
Yeah.
That reminds me of the like those things on YouTube, like the re-trailers.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Where they like they use original footage, but they like they recut it. Like they recut Mary Poppins to look like a horror movie.
Yes, yes.
They recut The Shining to look like
a family friendly
Shining.
Yeah, exactly. Where they're like, we're going up north, and they're like driving the car, all happy music and whatever. Yeah. I think the first couple ones were great, and then I think probably copycats probably churned out less good stuff.
The Back to the Future one I think was probably my favorite. No, where they created like, it was a love affair between Marty and the Doctor.
it was like
Brokeback, and they had like a Brokeback Mountain. Future, right? Brokeback to the Future.
Yeah,
that was
great.
But no, I don't mind at all. Like you know, because
you played six yet? Have you played?
I literally just fired it up earlier this evening.
Well, then thank you. I mean, thank you for taking time out to do this. Because
yeah, of course.
Usually, when I typically have like I've saved the Far Cry. I don't know why, because they're great, Dan. I don't know why, but I will often like save the Far Cries for like winter break or whatever, because I'm just sort of like, I'm gonna want to get into it and just like
disappear into it.
Yeah, exactly. And not necessarily even blast through it. Like I'll take my time wandering around doing all the stuff, but it's like I'll usually do it in a pretty intense, like a couple hours a day, which I usually don't have in life, like several hours a day to play a video game. But like all the recent Far Cries I think I remember the, I think the fastest I've done one was probably New Dawn. Like I don't think it came out during pandemic, but like I was playing it during pandemic and it was just like those, like, I was like, I now live in the post-apocalyptic, and also it like it touched that Mad Max thing that I really enjoy. Like,
yeah,
post-apocalyptic vibes is always one of my like go-tos. And then it was pandemic time.
Is that supposed to be post-apocalypse?
I was like, nope, I live here now. I live here in post-apocalyptic kind of Minnesota or wherever Far Cry 5 takes place. No, no. And that's what I'm into now. New Dawn is.
New Dawn is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The bombs drop at the end of 5, spoilers.
Yeah.
You know, it's a couple years ago.
Well, this going back to what you were originally talking about Far Cry is kind of how I've experienced it. So like when I first started with Ubisoft, like I didn't know a lot about Far Cry the brand at all. Mm-hmm. Like I knew about Primal. Mm-hmm. Cause I think that had come out, I think shortly before I'd started. So a lot of people that I worked with had just finished working on
Primal. I think Primal was a lot of Montreal too. Like I remember there was like Montreal, a lot of Montreal voice actors. And same I think engine, a lot of it,
right.
Was
it's the
like,
same.
Cause the development of those, the spinoff games is always less cause they use the same environment.
Yeah,
right?
So exactly.
It's like there's, even though they're full games.
Yeah. That's the word. That is, yes.
Well, they are the same engine, but they're also the same map.
Yeah.
Also, the entirety of the same map. You know, like, Primal takes place on the same map as 4, but, you know,
that game was
100,000 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, and they created their own language for that game.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. I saw it. Holly Gossi Frankel's in that game. Tristan Lala is in that game also.
Oh, nice. We actually, I stopped working on Far, like the writing was done on Far Cry 6 about a year ago. Mm-hmm. I've been on Rainbow Six ever since.
How's that Rainbow Six online culture?
And, and yeah, we use Holly all the time. She's fantastic.
The song, the voice of video games, Holly Frankel. He writes for
don't get me into that. Yeah,
we've had Holly on the show at least once, maybe twice, and I think that was one of the times that we had on. Most of the time, we were just talking about her voice work on Arthur.
Oh, really?
We're just like more about the Arthur character.
Like, she's a treat, though. She's a treat to work with. Like having her, it's something you don't even ever expect. Like, you know, I'm from Montreal. Like I've been around the Montreal entertainment industry for a long, long time. I never imagined there'd be a day when I would be writing dialogue that Holly Gauthier would be, you know, bringing to life. Like it's
in a Rainbow Six game. Like that's the extra piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. Like, well, do you guys know Elias Tufexis?
Yes.
So he was the voice in Deus Ex. He's, he's done so many voices for video games. But it was like when I first started out as a voice actor, he and his wife were doing, they were like my voice coach. They were doing voice acting school out of their apartment. So that's how I met him. And then fast forward like 8-10 years later, and suddenly I'm writing dialogue for Leonidas, King of Sparta. And there's Elias acting, doing the voice of Leonidas. Like it was
a personal friend of ours.
We had Michael Mando on.
Really good
first
guy.
Time we've had him on 3 times on the show now.
Yeah.
Inexplicably. He loves us.
Really nice guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He just every time he comes to Montreal, he's like, hey,
he's
can
nice,
I do another episode?
Nice man.
Like it's not even that. That's not even that much of a like a stretch. It's almost like that. He's been on the show like I think 3. The best. Michael Mando was absolutely the best.
Boss.
But the first time we had on him, we had him on the show, was coming off Far Cry 3.
Yeah.
Where he played played Voss.
Yeah.
Which was like,
and then he did our podcast.
Was weirdly like a breakout role for his like entire career. Which was like, he was doing Orphan Black and stuff. Like he was acting, but then he was just like, Voss suddenly put like his face and likeness everywhere.
Nice.
Then he did our show, and then he got the Go Plug Yourself.
It helped. He didn't.
Which I'm not going to say
not help.
You know, like solidified Far Cry 3 as like an all time classic, but like it helped. You know,
well, I mean,
it
helped. And like you said, I think he really yeah, gave Far Cry that reputation as having these fantastic villains. Like,
yeah, I mean, everybody.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, it really is.
Long time ago game. Like, that game, not to say suffers, but like, because he's not the final boss, right? He's a mid boss. Like, right. he dies basically at the start of the third act. Like he's like the second act villain, and then like the grand everything coming together. There's like another guy.
Yeah.
And like I do not remember that guy. I don't care. But like that game, you're like, yeah, it's Voss.
Yeah.
Like Voss like steals the show in that game in a big bad way. Oh, and to the point even where he was talking about it, they introduced him because he was like knocking it out of the park, and everybody was resonating so much. They added him into like other chapters. As like wherever they could to like give Voss more screen time,
yeah,
because he was like killing it. But it was like to your point when those main anchors were already set, they couldn't necessarily like it was too far along to change everything to make him the real last boss.
Yeah,
but they then like sprinkled him into as much of the game as possible.
All right,
like, where they could fit him.
Dude, they're still sprinkling him in. Like he's in our DLC. He's gonna be in our DLC for Far Cry 6.
Amazing. Yeah, Michael Mando Voss. That's amazing. So is there anything you want to say, talk about? Like, does 6 do anything special? We haven't really talked about
it. Yeah, can you fly a helicopter in this one? Like.
No, I'm just saying, like the games are, you're in these remote locations, shit goes haywire, you need to survive.
Can you shoot a gun in this one? Can you shoot a gun?
Yeah, I was like, dude, that's not even a question. It's Far Cry, baby. You can obviously fly a helicopter. There's a wingsuit. I was like, is there anything that like
Buena Vista Social Club?
I say was like, is Far Cry 6? That's like putting it
are they playable characters?
That you want to like tout?
Yes,
in the DLC. The Buena Vista Social Club just goes on a murder spree.
A couple things that come to mind.
Walter had to mute.
Jesus. You're going to be okay. Breathe, Walter, breathe. I mean, a couple things I think the characters, there are so many unbelievable characters, and I'm a little biased because, like I said, Montreal worked on the eastern region of the game, mm-hmm. and I think we've got some really, really
unique... I'm not going to say it's the best region, but, you know, it is the final one. It's like where everything's coming together. Really, like, the story just gels around that whole region. No big deal.
Yeah. So I'm really excited. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of videos or people even talking about that region yet because it is a big game. You know, there's a lot to get through. Like, you can play 20 to 25 hours before even getting to our part of the game. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the characters that we worked on are pretty awesome. And then also the weapons. Like, man, I want to show you guys something. I know guys, people can't see.
It's an audio podcast. We'll describe it as best as we can. Do you have a weapon mock-up? Because that's all I care about is seeing.
Give me 2 seconds. I'll be right back. Talk amongst yourselves.
While you do that, Walter, if you haven't played Far Cry New Dawn, you really should, because there's like improvised Mad Max style weapons, including one of them where you load like
I've been hiding your screens you forever because
like big circular saws.
But now I don't have people. Back on.
Dan just showed up on camera with some sort of
I can't see it.
Oh.
All
I don't know how to. Oh, this is the coolest. It's got like.
What is it?
It's got like mason jar. Is it some kind of a flamethrower? Improvised flamethrower situation.
No, I turned off. I can only see myself. I turned off your video because it was helping my internet.
You can't see it, Walter.
Walter turned his camera off.
God damn it.
I think if you click on the name, maybe you can get it there, Walter. Walter, this is the coolest thing. I feel so bad. Dan, you need to take a picture and send it to Walter at some point after the recording. This is like the coolest thing. I'm not going to say you should have done this, but like, I would have like foregone a paycheck to get that into my house. Like, I would have been like, you don't need to pay me this week. You gave me this prop.
Well, goodbye. If you go out and buy the collector's edition, like they were really generous. They gave each dev who worked on the game the collector's edition of the game, and it comes with this.
That's crazy. If you're listening to this right now and you can buy a collector's edition, my wife will get so mad, but I'm going to, like, listen, that's something you mount over your fireplace.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. and a lot of the ads, a thing with the Far Cry, the weapons, because you're okay. So basically, this island, which is fictionalized Cuba, has been taken over by a dictator.
Fictionalized dictator.
Yeah, who is played by Giancarlo Esposito, and you're basically like a guerrilla, they're trying to get a revolution going among a group of guerrillas, and of course, he's got the military. Mm-hmm. So it's all about making one person fight like an army of 100, you meet this guy named Juan, and he basically helps you reconstruct these weapons out of whatever. Like, there's a, you might have seen the ad for the CD player gun.
Yeah,
there's like an automatic.
I guess I'm taking that. That's a bit of a page out of New Dawn, right? Because New Dawn was all about the improvised weapons. I guess
cranked it to like an 11. Yeah. And you get these backpacks that come with these guns.
Yeah, Walter wants to see it again, Dan.
Are you there? You can see?
The camera's on.
Oh, hold on.
It's so cool, dude.
Yeah, it's wild.
Hold on, one more time.
Walter, can you see it?
Holy shit. Okay, that worth
no?
it.
No? Oh, buddy. No. This is a great audio. So improvised weapons.
Get that with a little addition.
Yeah, okay. Just hold it up, and then eventually Walter will. Yeah, way worth it.
Yeah. My physiotherapist was over this morning. So my physiotherapist came over, and she's this cute little blonde who, like, after putting me through excruciating amount of pain, she just points over to this thing
Hey Dan, what's that? I'm a physiotherapist, not a therapist, but have you built that? Do you need a therapist? You know, like, this is far outside of my area of expertise, but if you've built that and are intending on using it.
I talked to them.
This podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. No, it's not. But like,
I wish I took a picture because she took it, she held it, and I wish I had taken a photo because she was so little and this thing was just fucking huge.
That's amazing. That looks super cool. No, we haven't. Far Cry. I think that's actually a real like brand differentiator over most games. Is like Far Cry is like the animals always go like buck wild. That was actually animals.
Yeah, then you just get animal interaction mauled.
Is what like hooked me into the series in the first place. Way back in Far Cry 2, which I was like had a sniper rifle. I was like scouting out a camp. No, I didn't get mauled. I was like scouting out a camp and had to like retrieve a document or whatever. And like this tiger just wanders in out of like the savannah into the camp. Shit goes crazy. Like all the NPCs or whatever just freak out about this tiger. I guess at some point like gasoline knocks over, catches on fire, everything burns down, and then I just like walked in and like took the documents. Like that's not part of the game. That's not a scripted scene. That's just like NPC tiger wandered into like NPC military camp. And then I was just like sitting there just like looking through my scope. I was like, I'm just going to let this play out.
Yep.
And then I literally like everybody was dead or on fire. I like walked in, took the documents and walked out. And I was like, that was one of the single best like video game experiences I've ever had. Cause instead of doing this whole like infiltrate the camp, just a tiger came in, fucked shit up. Everybody freaked out, knocked over some gasoline, burnt down everything. Everybody's dead. And I'll just take these documents and turn them in, turn in the mission. Like I was like, thanks.
Yeah.
Game. And I was like, and those animal moments have always been almost every time you play through a Far Cry, there'll be like a random interaction with animals that is like nuts. Yeah. Like I remember one of the other ones too. You're just like just driving around or whatever else like that, and all of a sudden like a rhino just blasts into your Jeep, and you're like, well, now I have to deal with this. Like I was just going to drop off this information, but now a rhino just knocked my Jeep into a ravine or whatever it is.
That is also, like you said, it is also a part of the Far Cry magic. Like that is definitely one thing that they're famous for too. Or just once the gameplay systems start interacting with each other, like it's chaos. It's long.
So what's the coolest animal in Far Cry 6?
I want to say it's Chicharron.
Oh,
and name. He's a he was a rooster who used to be a like a cockfighter,
like a cockfighting champion.
But then he got the taste of soldado blood, and and now it's all he can. It's like.
Wow.
We call him the punk rock fighting cock because it's like he is the most badass rooster, and you follow him into battle. And in many ways, you almost become as bloodthirsty as he does along the way. Like I remember, so I was writing, you know, a little biased, but because I was writing the missions with Chicharron, and I wanted each mission, I wanted the player to almost feel like they were becoming a little bit more insane with each.
They had that Alice in Chains song in the game.
I mean, I feel each time you're following a rooster into battle, you are becoming more insane if that's where your life has taken you.
Yeah.
No, yeah. So.
Nice. They rooster ain't gonna die, just love the rooster.
Yeah, very much a part of the time. I remember that there was like one of the legendary animals, and I want to say 4 was a honey badger, and it was like just an absolute. It was a difficult fight to like deal with the honey badger, because the honey badger did not give.
Apologies about the quality.
Walter, do you want to hit up 5 questions? Is there anything else you want?
I'm gonna turn off the video again so we can get through the 5 questions here. Not a single vampire, damn it.
All right. I'll run through the questions. I have no reason to think Walter has them memorized because he's retired.
Yeah.
They don't pay me to remember these questions. All right. So, Dan, so every episode we ask the same 3 questions to every guest.
Mm-hmm.
The 4th question is from our previous guest to you, not knowing it would be you. And the 5th question is, what question would you like to ask our next guest? So you have that in the back of your head, I guess, the whole way through. Question number 1, and they're all over the map, so they're great. What do your thoughts sound like, Dan Bingham?
Lately, I think they sound like something that I believe is called tinnitus.
Oh, just ringing.
Maybe those aren't my thoughts. Maybe that's a legitimate.
Maybe that's problem. Tinnitus, Dan.
Yeah, just a high pitched squeal. That's kind of constant. Anyone else? Is that what their thoughts sound like?
No, I could imagine. I mean, you said that like the writing was done over a year ago, and you're already onto like writing another one. But like, do you ever find that you're like, especially in if you're writing a character or whatever, do you start trying to like think in the character voice?
Totally.
Or whatever have you. So it's like, you're like, those are not really my thoughts. This is a character's thoughts that I'm.
Yep. I do whatever I can to get myself in the headspace of the character. I'll listen to music. I'll do, you know, I'll imagine myself being in that environment. And often the best lines, some of the best writing that I'm able to do is when I literally just go for a walk and just kind of start talking as if I'm that character in that situation.
Very cool. Question number 2, what was your favorite thing to eat as a child? And could be a meal, could be a snack, could be candy, could be whatever. Just like
spaghetti with meat sauce.
Spaghetti and meat sauce. That's a A+. Was it like
so every restaurant, any restaurant I was taken to as a kid, like every time we went to any restaurant, I didn't care what type of restaurant it was.
Spaghetti sauce à la viande.
Mais oui.
that's the my brother was the same way. Like inevitably that was spaghetti salsa la viande was all, my brother was a bit of a picky eater, but like, were you a picky eater or was it you?
No,
just like,
no, I wasn't. Us? But that was
just like, you're like, this is just clearly the best thing on the menu, obviously.
Yeah. No, fuck yeah. Yeah, regular bread is fine.
And when I was a kid too, just if it came with some bread, some butter, and a glass of garlic milk. Bread? Back then, it didn't even have to be garlic bread. But now, I'll tell you. And so, you know, in the first week after my surgery, like, it is hell. Like, I was in hell. So it's like I'm on a lot of pain medication, but there, you still feel really messed up. You're still really weak. You can't really walk around. And a buddy of mine just hooked me up with a bunch of containers of meat sauce that he had frozen. You know, my girlfriend brought over a bunch of garlic bread. And still, I guess, still to this day, it was like the most comforting meal I had. It was like
pure comfort food.
And garlic bread, like some like mozzarella cheese thrown on it.
Mm-hmm. That's the way to your heart. That's the way to your heart, sauce. Dan. I'll make like amazing. Are we talking about that? Do you like just the meat sauce, or do you like a bowl?
Well, you're gonna get Wally's special sauce.
There, juice and carrots and celery and shit. Yeah. I got you, Dan.
Like a bolognese, yeah.
Maybe like what kind of meat? Are you like veal or the ground beef?
Yeah. Nice.
Well, just putting it together as we speak.
Right now, as an adult, what's that? Just ground beef?
Good question.
I'm gonna make a.
Beef is usually fine.
Turkey these days, ground turkey, you know,
it's usually fine.
I try to avoid gout.
Yeah,
it's a whole thing.
Interesting.
I've used that.
I'll try it.
Me too. In fact, it's like I'm kind of allergic to red meat because of that.
I hear you, Dan.
So this has been like a kind of a treat.
Ground turkey it is.
In fact,
ground turkey.
Most of the time I avoid meat entirely. But
you're like, screw it. I just had hip replacement. I'm like going to eat what I want.
It was comfort. Like I woke up, I came out of a nap and there was a bag of Doritos and I was never more excited to have a bag of Doritos in the house. It was like all comfort foods, man. It was,
that's great. Clearly you surrounded yourself by people who love and care about you. Since like, you're like, if you had been a piece of shit your entire life, you would have woken up to nothing, but everybody cared about you so much that you had all these comfort foods surrounded you. I've done something here. I've surrounded myself by people who are surrounding me with my favorite things. This is evidence that I've lived a good life. I think
that's a great idea for a video game. It's like, yeah, you got to go, you know, you go around and if you did the right thing by these NPCs, if you help them with their stuff and, you know, they'll all be there at the end to give you all the good food after get replacement surgery.
I think there was a game that had a similar mechanism in it, which was like on the way to the last boss. Like whoever you help, like showed up to give you stuff that would help. And if you help nobody, it's just like a walk down a corridor and no one shows up and you're like, well, you know.
Yeah,
like,
a couple of games have done that. I know Horizon Zero Dawn did that. Like if you helped out certain people, they will be there in the final fight with you.
Yeah.
Just
showing up to help out.
That kind of, I love that stuff. Like that's my favorite. Those are my favorite kind of games where it's like, you know, the things that you do matter and affect the outcome in the end.
I love it when it's not evident either. I'm always like, I know it's so hard to pull off, but like one of my favorite game and game series is like BioShock. And as much as I love BioShock to pieces, it's very like, do you help the little girl or do you harvest her for power? And I was like, those are two, like, there's a clear path of like good guy, bad guy here. Like I love when it's, like there is, what was the game? I'm blanking on it. Detroit Become Human. There we go.
Yeah.
Like in Detroit Become Human, it's not always obvious.
Yeah.
you're just sort of like, you're like, make the call. And you're like, I don't know. Like, you know, like, I don't know what. Yeah. You're like, I don't know what to do in this situation, which those ones are, I always way more interesting than like choose the good path or the evil path. And you're just sort of like, or like, this is like, you're like two people are in trouble. Help someone. You know, when you're like,
did you ever play The Witcher 3?
I never got into it, but I know there's a ton of that in
the Witcher 3. That to me, that's one of my favorite games of all time. And that we tried like as much as we, that very much inspired Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And we tried to like make your choices as kind of hard to make as possible. You know,
I marathoned like the nearly at least the back third, if not the back half of Heavy Rain in one day.
Really?
And I had like a dinner date with my wife, like set aside that evening. And she's like, you're super weird at super distance. I'm like, I've seen some shit. you bust into it and there's like, you have to decide to like shoot a homeless guy who you know did nothing wrong, but is just trying to like make a buck, but he has your daughter and he's like, you're like, oh, what am I doing? And it was just like, Sarah's like, you're in such a bad mood today. And I was like, yeah, I did the last 8 hours of Heavy Rain were not something I really should have just like plowed through in a day.
Yeah, maybe not.
That was not good, like pre-date, mind space things. Like, now let's go and have a romantic. I can't.
Yeah,
I can't think about this right now. I did some shit.
Yeah.
Our grandparents went to war. You just played Heavy Rain.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Yeah, try shooting a Nazi and then going on a date. All right.
Dan, question number three. What is the best and or fox worst
hair. Best
thing
is silver fox hair.
Up.
Silver fox.
Hip replacement surgery?
That's the worst. Got it. I was going to say, Dan is living the dream, though, of like not losing his hair and just going silver fox. That's like, I think anyone with a full head of hair is that's what we want. Like Walter and I both still have our hair intact. And like, I would much rather the silver fox root than losing any of it.
I got to say, cause that, I don't love that it went gray so early.
Like Steve Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. It was, I was still a bit of salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
But over the last like 10 years or so, it's gone like almost completely gray.
I think, but if you had the choice box to check off of like going gray early, but keeping the hair, I would like every time I'd
100%.
See it, I'd be like, ah, it's a bummer. 100%. I have like white hair or whatever in my 20s, but like, who cares? Yeah. Just, I have a whole head of hair. It's
exactly.
Yeah.
Everything's coming up, Dan. Sam Fairbrother, who did not win his riding.
Who else you vote for?
DG, he was the Green representative of Vote the Nation NDG because Walter voted for the astronaut, period. He said there was no way he wasn't voting for the astronaut. Green Party representative Sam Fairbrother wanted to know in any medium. So he was like, it could be book, could be film, could be music, could be whatever. But he's like, what like cult hit would you recommend? So like something that's like I said, either cult movie,
see,
cult book, like something that's like a cult following.
Oh boy.
Like A Clockwork Orange quickly springs to mind.
Wow, Walter, you could answer this. Come on, what cult hits?
Yeah, that doesn't count as anything.
Well, Dan, things figured out.
Are you talking about like the insane? The insane trauma.
Father's Day?
Oh my god, no. Nobody even talks about that.
Garbage Day! Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a deep, deep cut.
God, I'm drawing a blank on, like, you know, I mean, I'm actually reading Dune right now because I know that you can't call that really a cult. It's considered one of the greatest sci-fi books ever written, or, you know.
I've been meaning to read, reread. I read it way back in high school, but I was like, I've been meaning to reread Dune since they like announced the movie. And I'm like, well, now it comes out next week and I'm not about to read like 1,000 pages of Dune.
I've been cramming it. It's crazy. Like, and I'm close. I've only got like 100 pages left.
But of Dune.
Yeah.
Right?
Like I had never read it. It was one of those things. It's like I had never read it. I'd seen the movie, the 80s, you know.
Which is not.
Hated it.
It's like at best the cliff notes of the book too, like at best, like a misinterpreted cliff notes, like it's like
documentary.
But what I would, here's what I would recommend for people is Yodorovsky's Dune. Documentary about the film that never got made that could have been, because it if you watch the documentary, it almost makes you sad that movie didn't exist because it sounded, it was.
It may not have been Dune, but it would have been something.
Yeah. Oh, God.
El Topo, Magic Mountain.
I mean, in film school, we watched a bit of, I think we good watched, stuff. What's the name of that? Yeah, I think
El Topo. El Topo is insane.
Well, I think that's what we watched. That's what like put him on the map.
El Topo Magic Mountain is so, I only have like glimpse, like naked that kids memory riding just in like bits and phrases. Like I remember like the weird when they're in the lot of like nudity and like silver outfits and stuff like that. Like
cool.
Yeah. Absolute
so there we go. There's my recommendation: to start with Yodorovsky's Dune, and then maybe check out his actual films. I don't think a lot of people know about him.
Yeah, Yodorovsky's Dune is an absolute great documentary. I think it's pretty easy to find, I would say. Yeah. And like I said, it does make you wish that movie existed, but at the same time, especially as you're coming off of reading the book, it would not have been Dune.
No,
it would have been Yodorovsky's Dune. Yeah. Like it would have been.
But something. Also, it also showed because they created that Bible, that book, that went on to inspire almost every great sci-fi film that ever came out of Hollywood after that. So, in a weird way, that his movie didn't get made, but 30 other famous movies got made thanks to him.
It still had like a crazy legacy of a film that never got made.
Yeah.
Walter, what's your changed up answer?
Changed. I was gonna say. Yeah, I was gonna swerve it to Chuck Palahniuk's Generation X experimental novel from the early 90s.
Double swerve.
But then I'm like, no. It's actually the discography of the band Cake. Mm. Yeah, like not just the singles, like all of their shit.
No,
it's all really good. It's all real good stuff.
Oh,
interesting.
Real good live band. I've seen them like five, six
not
times.
Just going.
They're like my fucking fish, you know.
I've heard they're incredibly good live.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing.
Yeah,
well, they asked me to stop after the third show.
I once bought a van and followed Cake on tour.
I didn't know what to do when they
quit my job, sold my house, and I followed Cake.
Bunch of cake heads.
What are cake fans called?
Yeah.
I mean, cake heads.
Cupcakes?
Yeah, cupcakes is good. And then turning the tables on our future guest without knowing who it will be, what question would you like to ask a total stranger?
Oh, that's a good question, too.
That's why I put it at the top, so it would be percolating in the back. Damn.
I know. Well, I'm not good at multitasking, so it's like whatever the next question was erased all thinking of the future question that I'm going to have to invent.
Dang.
Let's see. I mean, just because I'm all about surgical procedures right now, I'm wondering, have they ever had a surgical procedure, and what is like the best/worst moments of the whole experience?
Best and worst moments of it. Okay. That's good. Have you ever had a surgical procedure? What are the best or worst moments of it? I
teased it earlier.
I'd say I think I've never had any major
you stitches
because
you're a snitch.
Other than like the dental
snitch,
stuff. That was the closest I had.
You have some
I know,
stitching.
Like, I mean, I've,
yeah, that's a classic case.
I've had stitches, but yeah,
I had a hernia that I neglected for years. And then it got
that's right.
Got to the
I was snitching, so I got
local
stitching.
Anesthetic alone wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be put full under, so they gave me the fucking epidural and shit. And no. And I talked so much during the procedure that they
didn't demand
like,
just like a belt, like a belt to just like give me a belt, I'll just bite it.
They gave me like extra oxygen just to kind of like, you know, like make me go to sleep and shit. So I'd stop talking. Yeah. No, but then it could be like a relative or something. Or, no, I think we'll work it.
I mean, I don't know if that's a great question because the answer could just be no.
Is I'm not going to be here for that episode, so I don't care.
We'll figure it out. Walter won't even be here. That's it. Instead, I've had enough dental work. One of the weirdest.
Well, yeah, that gum grafting counts, I think. Like, I've been through that and it's like, it's hell.
So I had so this is apparently like a rarity. I developed almost a weird cavity on one of my front teeth, which is like apparently like not a thing. So there was like a weird like divot in the front of my teeth. And then they had to do this like burn thing and then graft like a false tooth. And that was weird because it was, especially since it was on the front, because again, under local anesthesia, whatever else like that. But because it was in the front, I smelt the burning flesh. So I heard the like, and like smelt burning. And I was like, that's my mouth. I was like, what's happening here? Like, you see smoke out of the corner of your eyes and like, you smell like cooking and you're like,
yeah,
because
you got a soft little mouth.
I'm sorry. I didn't have my hip replaced. They just done stuff to my mouth.
I was telling Dan in the
soft
before
little
the thing,
mouth. Thank you,
Dan. When I was like fucking into the thing, but back in the day, we got to go to the Ubisoft deal and we met the guys, the boys. We did another podcast with the Ubisoft. The guys, the boys there, and they hooked us up with the.
Yeah, we did.
Was that the time when we got the games?
I'm blanking on his name. The director of
Far
Cry 4.
Yeah. So really, I was hoping that Dan would be able to keep that up, but I'm not disappointed. You know, at least the gun. Well, I mean,
we got the games for 3 and for 4. But
hopefully, we can play with that at some point. Mm-hmm. So I think it's been a pretty good one.
Or at least the gun, at least the flamethrower. We're coming over to Dan's house to play with the flamethrower. That's payment alone. Do you have anything else to plug? Dan or Walter? Walter, I know you have a show tomorrow night. Tomorrow night being Friday in podcast
thing.
World.
We'll just go through the Theater St. Catherine website and launching a new show on October 28th. Like Turbo House, called Turbo Laughs, and that first one's being headlined by Inez and I, and that's going to be a fun one. And then finally,
Turbo Laughs.
And then finally on October 30th, Night Fight Lives, Night Fight Halloween returns, and I might die. At this
co-host of the show,
and that's going to be at the what do you call it there, the Cafe Cleopatra. With featuring Mr. Joey Elias, and my co-host, of course, Leland Beckman, and we'll be doing the whole Night Fight experience. And Joey's gonna do like a headline set. And at some point, I'm gonna have to explain that whole situation to Joey, and I'm sure it's gonna be great. I'm meeting him for lunch. I'm meeting him for lunch tomorrow, so I'm gonna run all this by him and see what he's good to do. But it's gonna be a good show.
I have to explain Night Fight to Joey. Cool.
Joey, have you ever seen Carrie?
Oh, very cool.
Hey, Joey, how do you feel about having a bucket of blood dumped on you? We're not doing that, Walter. Yeah. Dan, do you have anything else you want to shout out before we go?
Pick up Far Cry 6.
I will do it. And you may have sold me on the Giant Collector's Edition. My wife will get angry, but I'll be like, here's what I'm going to try to do. I'm going to try to turn it into some kind of an early anniversary present or something. I'm going to be like, buy it for me.
Yeah.
And she's going to be like, what are you going to do with that?
What console? What do you play it on? What do you?
I would be playing it on PS4 Pro. I haven't upgraded to the 5 yet.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat. I don't know how we're ever going to find one.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. I'm not in a huge rush because all of the everything. From what I've understood, you're like, it's frame rate and loading time, which yeah. I'm like, is not necessarily like altering my experience.
Totally.
The worst. So
other than Demon's Souls and I think Returnal.
And there's another From one that's coming out too. Like, well, it's not
Elden Ring.
Yeah.
Elden Ring. But that's going to be on PS4 anyway. So,
but I've from what I've heard though, they're like, that's a that's a like early PS4 to PS3 thing where you're like, they're like, everyone's like, no, that's not going to be a PS4 game. Like, it's going to be out on PS4, but that's not where to play it. So I can't imagine. I can only imagine the From Software stuff. Like, if they're developing for the 5 and then like reversing it to a 4, I'm like, the 4 is going to be, it's going to be a cyberpunk situation.
Oh, God.
Where they're like, oh, actually, it's not really that playable on the PS4. Mm. Our bad.
I hope not.
Okay. So thanks so much, Dan. Hey there, loyal listener who listens to the show all the way past the closing credits. Thank you for listening to Go Plug Yourself. We really, really appreciate it. If you enjoy the show, I cannot stress this enough, please tell people about it. We don't really have a budget for marketing or fancy Facebook ads or putting up billboards on the street. We really have to rely on word of mouth, which basically means that if you listen to the show and you enjoy the show, please share it, link it, tell your friends about it. Say, hey, there's this show called Go Plug Yourself. They talk to Montrealers or people that have stuff going on in Montreal or just people that have stuff to promote that we kind of care about. We can go outside of Montreal if we want to. So just tell people about the show. It's a fun show. We like doing it a lot. We've done it for over 200 episodes, and it's in large part thanks to support from people like you. If you want to support the show at all, you can go to patreon.com/9to5cc and throw a couple bucks our way. It really helps with the hosting fees for the most part. We're really not trying to make a profit on this. And also, if you want to be a guest on the show, or you know someone who might want to be a guest on the show, you can contact us either on Facebook or on Twitter. There's a bunch of ways to find us and let us know. And if the scheduling and the timing and everything works out, maybe you can be the next person who comes on the show and plugs something. Big thank you, as always, to Leland Beckman and Oral Turpitude, who provided our theme songs. And of course, a thank you to all of the hosts that we have on the show. Walter J. Ling, who technically retired but still sometimes hosts, Christopher Vendito, Lawrence Korber, and Ines Anaya, are all amazing co-hosts, and you should support them and their comedy and all of that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for choosing Go Plug Yourself as one of your from the millions of podcasts, and have a beautiful day. Thank you.
9to5.cc, podcasts, blogs, and comics, made in Montreal since 2011.